on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is InvestTalk, independent thinking, shared success. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor, Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to InvestTalk. This is our May 9th, 2025 edition of InvestTalk. Happy Friday out there to everybody. We made it to the end of the week. It was a quick one, for me at least, and a lot to do and a lot to talk about. And that's what we will do today, kind of sum up the week and give you a primer for next week. Okay, and I'm Justin Klein, and my objective each and every weekday is to help you achieve your own version of financial freedom. And we do that by answering your finance and investment questions and bringing you actionable data and perspective to bring back to your own personal situation so you can make better decisions with your money. Smart decisions. Decisions that are made based on facts. Not on hyperbole, not on emotions, not on political bias, etc. Now, in just a bit, we'll talk about today's market activity and run down the show topics for the hour. But as usual, we'll tackle this caller question first.
Hi, I am calling about Kraft Heinz Company, ticker KHC. I was wondering if I could get some insight about this company and what you thought about it. I'll be listening on your program. Thank you for all the good information. Thanks, bye.
And this is the company that you think of. We're talking about Oscar. They own Oscar Mayer, Velveeta cheese, Philadelphia cream cheese, obviously Heinz ketchup, and all their condiments. And it's a huge company, huge brand, $33 billion market cap. However, the problem here is that they have a large amount of debt, about $20 billion in net debt. And they have a high dividend, 5.7%, but I don't like that debt profile. And their cash flow has peaked out. It peaked out in 2021, and it's been declining ever since. Not aggressively, to be fair. It does have about $3 billion in free cash flow, but on a $52 billion enterprise value, that's not a very good free cash flow yield, especially for a company whose earnings and sales are floundering. Last quarter, revenues were down 6%. Earnings were down 10%. And that doesn't look like it's changing this year going forward. Total earnings this year are expected to be down 15%. And analyst estimates for this year and next year continue to go lower. So I don't like the trends here. I don't like the debt. And the chart is not making me feel all warm and fuzzy either. It's in a strong downtrend. It's been trying to reverse, and every time it gets to the 100-day moving average, it fails. And so it's just sitting there in a bearish setup looking to go lower. And when you have that much debt compared to its market cap, it's the market signaling that this is a company that likely will eventually cut their dividend. And they had some accounting problems before, and they've already cut their dividend, actually, if I look at it. Their dividend was 62 cents per share back in 2018. Now it's down to 40, and it's been flat ever since. And like I said, they had some accounting issues, I believe, back in the day. I just don't like those names. And then you look at profitability, return equity, only 5%. And it's been hanging out around 5% since 2016, so nearly a decade. So this is a perfect example of a value trap, if you want to call it that, a dividend trap. This is a dividend trap. That might be a new word I'm going to use a lot. A dividend trap. People look at the dividend and they think that this is all rosy. Oh, a nice 5.7% dividend on this kind of blue chippy type of brand. Let's go for it. The reality behind the scenes is very different. It looks bad, straight out. And so I would absolutely sell, not buy. You know, it's a better short than a buy. So passing big time on Kraft Heinz. Now we have a lot of ground to cover over the next 45 minutes, and here are some of the questions or some of the topics we have planned to hit. My main focus point is about mortgage rates. If we do go into recession, probably likely in the back half of the year, I'll talk about that. Will mortgage rates drop? Okay, so we'll discuss what experts have seen in mortgage rates in past downturns and why this time might be a bit different than previous recessions. So we'll look at that. Also, what are us experts on Wall Street looking at to understand the impact of these tariffs? It's, you know, a lot of what happens with tariffs, you don't feel it for weeks, if not months later. Why? Because of inventory. Companies have usually anywhere from month to 3 months of inventory, depending on the company. And if you look at shipping volumes in the first couple months of the year, most of them have elevated inventories. They were preparing for some sort of tariff regime. And that means, you know, the ultimate impact on shelves will not be felt for, you know, a little bit longer, closer to, you know, June, July than this month. Although you may start seeing something this month. But we're going to look at what we should follow to see whether the impact on shipments is real or just conjecture. And then we'll talk about market volatility. You know, we've had recent market volatility. It's obviously the trigger, the catalyst was the trade war. But that doesn't mean that it's all about the trade war. There can be other factors as well. And I see this a lot, is that markets, investors, they blame one thing. And oftentimes markets move for a multitude of factors. So we'll look at that. And then we also have voice bank questions. One is on Grainger and the other waste management. And then we have some questions that came in via our YouTube channel as well. And of course, I welcome your finance and investment questions right now. But we're heading into a short break. And on the other side, I will look at today's market activity and answer more of your questions here on Invest Talk.
Serious investors are certain to have finance and investment questions.
Hello, Invest Talk. This is Jose from New York, and I'm looking into buying a small position in Dollar Tree or Dollar General.
And the best person to ask your question in the right way is you.
Hi, Invest Talk. I was calling in with a question on the stock Nike.
And 24/7, rain or shine, Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero stand ready to provide their unbiased answers.
Now, it is up into a little bit of resistance, so you probably want a little bit of consolidation here.
So this company does not capitalize itself with equity. It does not capitalize itself with debt.
Your participation makes InvestTalk better.
Let's play a caller question from 888-99-SHARP.
This is James from Georgia. I was trying to call about ticker symbol SCCO.
So don't forget to call InvestTalk.
I appreciate the show, guys. Thank you.
888-99-CHART. The calls are free. The unbiased answers are free. So what are you waiting for? Call InvestTalk. 888-99-CHART.
Now let's go take a look at the market today. And overall, it was a ho-hum day. You had the S&P down 7 basis points, 4 total points. The NASDAQ was down 2 points, total of 1 basis point overall. So not a whole lot doing there on the day. Kind of choppy. You had some losses in Google, Meta, NVIDIA, Salesforce, Palantir, IBM, Eli Lilly. A lot of the drug stocks continue to be weak. Merck down 2%. So that's where a lot of the weakness this week was. You had some gains today out of Apple and Amazon, even though those were mainly down for the week. Tesla up about 4.7 on the week. That was pretty much all its gains for the week. And choppiness elsewhere. A whole lot of nothing. Mainly it's because over the weekend we have the first meeting between President Trump and or his team at least and China. And rumors are that he's looking to cut the tariffs down to anywhere from 50 to 60%. Down from 145% today. Now, that's well and good. That's an improvement. It'll probably unlock some trade. It's not a complete embargo, but it's still high enough to really hinder the vast majority of trade out of China. And so I could see that being, you know, the headline on Monday and the market not reacting very positively to it. But we'll see, right? That's why the market's kind of paused, really waiting for that news. Now, other assets, you had the treasuries were flat after yesterday's big move higher across the curve. So I'll be watching that next week. Do we get another breakout in rates to the upside? Something to be on the lookout for. Dollar index was down 0.2%. Gold up 1.2%. That continues to be strong. Closed the week strong. We had that mini pullback from about 3,500 to 3,300 on gold. And overall, it just remains very, very strong. I expected, due to positioning and sentiment, that you'd get a more dramatic pullback, and we just really didn't get it so far. It's just kind of chopping here between 3,300 and 3,500. Bitcoin futures up 1.7. We're a little over 100,000 today. And overall, that's a nice move. We broke above some key resistance around 95. The next key resistance will be that all-time high. That's what it is threatening to tackle. I don't think it gets there this cycle. I just think there's not enough liquidity in the system and for it to be this risk-on asset to really break out. But we'll see. Right now, hanging around just shy of $103,000. What else? You had crude oil. Crude oil was up 1.8% for the week, up 3.2%, and that's after the quote-unquote news of an OPEC increase in supply. What was not talked about there was OPEC. A lot of times they cheat. The members cheat, right? They say this is the cap, but some of them cheat because they want more money. Well, this. The news was not really news. It was actually the OPEC officially raising the cap to the levels where they were already cheating. So it wasn't really adding new supply to the market. And so that's why you had a bounce back in crude overall. So that was the market today, a pause, a solid up week. We still remain near resistance around this 5750, 800 on the S&P. We closed the week at 5660. Effectively. And so there could be more upside next week, but to get through this 5,800 level would be very, very challenging in the short term. We would need more consolidation. And I just don't really see the economic backdrop that's going to get us there. I think best case scenario over the next couple of, you know, 2-3 weeks, call it till the end of this month, is a choppy sideways market in between this 55 and 5,800 level on the S&P. So that's where I'm expecting, but we'll get more fireworks next week as we get some potential resolution to the trade war with China. Now, let's briefly mention the newest KPP Premium newsletter, which will be distributed tomorrow. This week, in the KPP Insight section, we discussed direct indexing. And the stock ideas section, we mentioned an industrial manufacturing company and a security solutions company. And in portfolio management section, we touched on the difference between fundamental-based returns and momentum-based returns. And if you're interested in learning more, visit us at investtalk.com to subscribe. And The newsletter will come to your inbox on Saturday mornings. Now we're moving into our first extended break. Still to come in this podcast will be your voice bank calls. And we'll get to our main focus point. So stay with me. But also, give us a call at 888-99-CHART.
The InvestTalk phone lines never close. And now, Justin Klein is here taking your calls live. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Now, my main focus point today is about mortgage rates in a recession. Okay. And in April, JP Morgan predicted that the probability of recession this year is 60%. Apollo Global Management thinks it's 90%. I would put those odds, I'd go somewhere in the middle. And frankly, it'd probably be towards the back half of this year. And it's not just about the trade war, although that's certainly a catalyst. There are multiple factors that typically create a recession. Now, for me, that's a combination of the trade war and waning liquidity in the back half of the year due to a refinancing cycle. So you'll have the double whammy of smaller profits due to the trade war, and then rising costs of capital as companies refinance into higher cost debt from when a lot of them issued that debt back in 2021, 2022, 2020, etc. Now, historically, when you do have a recession, rates come down. But that's not always the case. And this time is a bit different than most other recessions we've seen over the past 100 years, because of the, maybe not 100, but say 75. Because this is a time where we're in a lot of debt as a country. And as you saw with the recent kind of conniption fit that the bond market had when we had this big sell-off on the Liberation Day news, yields can easily go up on the treasury market, which feeds into the mortgage market. The 10-year yield, which the Fed does not control, that is the proxy for mortgage rates. Typically, the mortgage rate is anywhere from 150 to 200 basis points above the 10-year treasury rate. Now, over the past 50 years, in all economic downturns, 30-year mortgage rates eventually dropped. They maybe didn't drop initially, but sometime during the recession or soon after, you had mortgage rates go down. From late 73 to early 75, that recession rates fell, then rose, and then dropped again. And then in 1980, mortgage rates went from 12.85, yep, in the teens, to over 16 during the recession, and then dropped to under 12 as the recession ended. So it's not a straight line. Can it go up, then come back down? It can be a very volatile period. Or rates may just stay sideways. A lot will depend on what the Fed does, what Treasury does. Do they issue more on the long end or the short end? So far, they're issuing on the short end. They're trying to prevent a blowout in yields. What's interesting to me is that even then, rates are rising and threatening to break out once again, even though they're not issuing a ton of long-term debt. So I don't think that this is a period where you can just bank on, hey, rates are going to drop. I'm going to be able to refinance my mortgage, or I'm going to get a mortgage on a new home that's in the fours. I don't think that's happening. Maybe in the fives if you're lucky. And I can easily see a situation where mortgage rates just kind of hang out here, right around 7%. Right now, the 30-year mortgage is at, according to Mortgage News Daily, 6.89%. And it's been really chopping since last fall between 6.75 and 7.25. And frankly, it would not shock me to see that be the new range we're in for a while until we get some resolution to the economy, to Fed policy, Treasury policy, et cetera, and inflation, right? Where is inflation going? So the simple answer to that question, will we get lower mortgage rates in a recession? Likely, but probably not dramatically so. Now, the next Invest Talk, we'll look into this topic. 6 ways to use AI to improve your financial life. Discover how AI can help you master budgeting, investing, credit scores, taxes, and retirement planning, making your financial life simpler and smarter. That story will be for Monday, but for now, I'm Justin Klein, and I'm ready to take your calls at 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk is ready 24/7 for your finance and investment questions.
I'm hoping you'll give me your take on Ormat Technologies, ORA.
Is it a good idea to sell your losses in a Roth IRA and just use whatever you have left to reinvest into better stocks?
Don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
The weekend is here, or almost here, but you've got finance and investment questions, so step up and call in. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Justin or Luke. I'm calling today about a couple of industrial companies, Graham Corporation, ticker GHM, and Graco, ticker GGG. Just wondering if you'd hold these companies in today's environment. Let me know if you think I should sell out of them or just keep holding on. Thank you very much. Love the show. Bye.
All right. Looking at two industrial names. I'll start with the second one first. And that was Graco, manufacture equipment to move, pump, meter, mix, and dispense fluid and powdered materials. And this is a name that we actually used to own for clients, but we kind of got impatient with it. It didn't really move much. It was kind of neutral, hanging around this mid-80s level, and we held it for a period of time, but couldn't get a clear direction on it and sold it. We liked the business, but we just found better use of that capital. So, you know, if you go look at profitability, it is solid, about 20% return on equity and return on invested capital. They have pretty much no debt, net cash on their balance sheet, really. Good free cash flow, around $550 million on a market cap of $13 billion, which puts you at about a 3-4% free cash flow yield. Solid, but not amazing. Dividend yield about 1.3%, and they're taking that cash flow and they are buying back shares. So we like the cash flow, or the shareholder yield here. We like the profitability, but I think the biggest issue is just the growth. It's not a whole lot. Earnings growth this year is supposed to be 6%, 7% next year. And the trends in earnings growth are coming down as well. So that was another issue that we had, is So that was the issue with Graco. A fine company, but not, we ended up kind of falling out of love with it. And then Graham Corp manufactures vacuum and heat transfer equipment for the petrochemical and oil refining businesses. And this has much better earnings growth, 42% revenue growth, earnings growth for this year, 16% expected next year. It's much smaller, only a $380 million market cap. So you're taking much more risk than you are with Graco, but you're getting better earnings growth. Now, let me take a look at the profitability here. It's not as profitable, only 8% return on equity. It has a good balance sheet as well, no long-term debt. Free cash flow, though, only about $18 million, but you know, on a market cap of only $380 million, that's not too bad. It's about a 4-ish% free cash flow yield with pretty good growth. The technicals are much better. It has pulled back, but it's finding its footing once again. So if I'm going to pick one or the other, I do think that longer term, Graco just has a more consistent business. But in the near term, as a trade, I would probably go with Graham. Both are solid. I love that fact that both have a very strong balance sheet. And so it just depends on the risk that you want to take. Is this more of a trade or a long-term hold? Thanks for the call. Now, on Fridays, we generally make time to fit in a quick rundown of some key benchmark numbers. So let's do that right now. The two-year yield, 3.878. That is up from last week, which was at 3.836. So up about 4 basis points. And that was after the Fed meeting. And markets are basically anticipating a less dovish Fed going forward, marginally. Now, the 10-year yield up to 4.37%. That's up about, about 5.5 basis points on the week. When it last week it closed at 4.314. So once again, rates are going up across the curve. Sometimes in a minor way, sometimes in a major way. But either way, this is something I'm watching. Are we going to get a break above the 4.5% level on the 10-year, up above 5% on the 30-year? Those are things I'm watching, and that could be a major drag on asset prices. Gold was at $3,337 per ounce. That's an $11 increase from last week. And 78 weeks ago, it was at $1,935. So very strong move and is in a strong uptrend. Silver, $32.79. That's up about less than $1.75 from last week, but still up dramatically from about a year ago when it was at $22.80. Oil at $60.94 per barrel. That's a $2.79 increase from last week. So like I said, even with that OPEC news, it really did okay. And we kind of remain in this range around $60 per barrel, $65. And I think that's where we'll be before we get some resolution to kind of broad demand. And, you know, are shale names going to continue to pull back from their CapEx? And if they do, that's going to put a big floor under oil. Gasoline on average for the country, $3.14 per gallon. That's down 4 cents from last week. And in California, our price is $4.84, a 7% increase compared to last week. So we're definitely feeling it more than the rest of the country here. As comparison, Missouri, $2.81 per gallon. That's your average. Over $2 less than what we're paying here in California. Now let's keep things moving and play another listener question from 888-99-CHART.
I love the show. Wanted to get your take on W.W. Grainger Incorporated, G as in George, W.W. Just wanted to see if you thought it was a good long-term investment play. And if so, if you thought it was at a good entry point, or if not, what you thought a good entry point would be. Thank you very much.
All right, looking at GWW, which is W.W. Grainger, and this is a distributor of maintenance, repair, and operation products for the industrial space. And they have over 5,000 suppliers, so suppliers sell into them, and then they distribute the products. And they have 300 global branches, so they're worldwide, about a $50 billion market cap. Very minimal debt, that's good. Return equity 51%. Free cash flow about $1.5 billion on about a $50 billion market cap. That's about a 3% free cash flow yield. That's not an amazing value from a free cash flow perspective. And if you look at enterprise value to EBITDA, it's around 18, near the high end of its range. And if I'm looking at profitability or profit growth, shall we say, last quarter, revenues are up 2%, earnings are up 2%. This year, earnings are expected to be at 4% and then 10% next year. Although both of those estimates are trending lower. So that's what worries me, is that you're paying a pretty hefty multiple, mid-20s multiple. It's trading over $1,000 per share. And if it's only making $40 this year, it's about a 25, 26 multiple. Now, if I look at the chart, it has peaked out recently around $1,200 or so and change. It was in a downtrend going into Liberation Day, sold off, but it's actually up since Liberation Day. So you're seeing some relative strength there, but overall it's in a nice downtrend. And I don't love the technicals. It found support at the 100-week moving average, which historically it has found support. But if you go into a recession, I think this has more downside potentially to go. Now, where would be the price that I would think about picking it up? Let me give you a number here. Well, then major support would be around $820 per share. That'd be the first major support that would get interested in this name. Around 700 would be that next level. A major support, and there's massive support around 565. So those are my levels. I do think it gets to 820, and I would start a position there and, you know, see where we're at economically. But I don't love the trends. I don't like the overall valuation here. It does look expensive as we go into an economic slowdown. So keep it on the watch list because it's a great business, great company, great balance sheet. But I'd be patient on picking up Grainger till at least 820. Thank you for the call. Now let's touch a bit on what Wall Street is looking at when we are trying to decide how much impact these tariffs are having on the overall economy. Now we look at things like ports, what truckers are saying, what railroads are saying in their earnings outlook, what shipping and logistics data is saying in those companies. And the main one, especially because we're dealing with basically a China embargo, is container imports in LA and Long Beach. Now, one thing to understand is that going into Liberation Day, there were an elevated number of containers coming into those ports. For January, there were about 950,000 containers. That's up from the January of 2024, when it was only around 760,000 containers. So about 200,000 more containers just in that 1 month. February, the difference was not as stark. It was at about 77,000 containers versus about 770,000 versus 740,000 in February of 2024. And in March, there were about 760,000 containers coming to those ports versus the March of last year, it was about 680,000. So the big difference was January, but there's still a pretty stark difference in February and March as well. We don't have the full data for April, but we'll be watching for that to see how many less containers there will ultimately be, you know, to ship. And we're getting more indicators from retailers, even though they're stocked up, they are likely to see these imports impact the shelves sometime in June. Now, China's U.S. bookings declined 60% since April. And overall, in the Port of LA, Imports are expected to fall 35% this week compared to a year ago. And the container ships expected at Southern California ports in the following 2 weeks expected to be down to about the May 5th week, this is this week, 43 ships in the LA ports. That compares to a range between the low end 50 and the high end 70 for the past, basically since last summer. And we've been in this mid to low 40s since April 23rd. Now, on the trucking side, net orders for heavy-duty trucks in North America were down to 16,500 vehicles in March. That's down 5.9% from the same month last year. And it's the highest order cancellation rate in almost 2 years. And if you look at dealer inventory, reached record high levels to 91,600 vehicles in March. Now, S&P Global has a monthly survey of 27,000 businesses in 40 different countries, and it makes up their global supply chain volatility index. And that was actually in negative territory in March. So this takes into account factors like demand for goods, inventory levels, transportation costs, etc. And we know that it's going to pull back even further due to worsening economic conditions in April. So we'll be watching to see what that number looks like. And then the Dow Jones Transportation Index. And it's underperforming the Dow by 9 percentage points this year. And these are companies that have to do with shipping, railroads, logistics, etc. That 9 percentage points up to this time in the year is one of the worst showings in the past decade. So we continue to look at the reports from companies like J.B. Hunt, Matson, Knight Transportation, etc. And those are the areas that we're focusing on to see what type of real-world concrete impact this is having on businesses. And it is profound. And it really can't be ignored. And that's why I do think that there is a recession. But, you know, it right now what's happening with businesses is they're pausing. One of the big reasons for the rebound in equities since the low is actually buybacks. Why? Because they don't want to hire people. They don't want to invest in R&D and CapEx to build that capacity because there's just too much uncertainty. So what do you do instead? You have money burning a hole in your pocket. You've already approved share buybacks from your board. Buy back shares. Now, the strongest correlation with unemployment is corporate profits. When companies start to see margins shrink, profits shrink, one of the first things they start to do is actually lay off workers. They haven't felt that in a big way yet, but the longer this stays with us, the more likely these hiring freezes will turn into layoffs. Now we're heading into our final break. The new InvestTalk store is open. So head over there and check out investtalkstore.com.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Now, from time to time, we receive InvestTalk questions from the YouTube comment section of our InvestTalk channel. So let's tackle one of those questions that just came in. Gil Tel Aviv says, I'm looking at investing in AppFolio as it seems well-positioned to benefit from real estate growth. I'd love to hear your thoughts on the property management software space overall and how AppFolio stacks up against its competitors. APPF is the symbol, and it is about a nearly $8 billion market cap. Earnings growth is solid, although it is slowing down, and that's my biggest worry here. I've looked at this name over the past couple months, and you had earnings growth last year of 156% to $4.37. But this year, earnings are expected to be only $5.18. That's a 19% growth. So dramatic slowdown in growth here. A year and a half ago, revenues were up 39%. Earnings are up over 1,000% year over year. But the latest quarter, revenues up 16% and earnings up 15%. Solid, but what type of multiple are you going to pay for that level of growth? Trading at $214 per share. And let's say, even though estimates are coming down for next year, let's say it earns $6 next year. Are you willing to pay 25 times, 30 times? Let's say you're going to pay 30 times $6 per share. That puts it at $180 per share. It's at $214 today. And those estimates are coming down, as they normally do. A little farther out, you look for at earnings estimates, the less faith that you should have in them, because they do tend to trend lower. Now, the good thing here is they have a good balance sheet, zero long-term debt. Free cash flow is $178 million. That's good. But it also has really leveled out here around $170 million for the past few quarters, which puts it at a free cash flow yield of only 2.5%. Not great. It's profitable, 46% return on equity. That's good. They're starting to buy back shares. I like that. But it's just trading at too high a multiple. Price of sales at 9.5. I always say anything over 10, usually pretty egregious. Enterprise value EBITDA, 48 times. That's very high. You want that usually in the teens. And then I look over the chart. And this has really not done well over the past year plus. It peaked out around $275 per share. And that was back in July of last year. Sold off, found a low around 190, rallied back up to around that 275, made a double top. Slightly lower, higher high. So technically, it's in a downtrend. Did I say lower, higher high? That didn't make sense. A lower high. There we go. And it's been in a downtrend really since last July. It's had a recent sell-off. It's bounced back. But it's trending lower. This is in a downtrend. This is on its path towards a multiple contraction. And that's why I wouldn't buy it. It would be on my radar because I do like the business. And I would like to buy it at a reasonable price. It's just not there yet. And I think there's a lot more downside to go. Honestly, I probably wouldn't look at this until 175. There is good support around there. That's where things get somewhat interesting. But I don't really love it until about 140. I would really love it around 110, but you know, I kind of see this, so how it evolves, how the technicals evolve, how the growth evolves. Does it turn into just a single digit earnings grower? Then you're getting massive multiple contraction and you probably see the 110 level. So NIM, I would just continue to watch, but I wouldn't be buying it. Now, I'm Justin Klein. This completes another Invest Talk program. We thank you for listening. We encourage you to tell your friends and family about a free podcast download, which you can find anytime on iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. And if today's show made you think about your own financial picture, your investments, taxes, retirement, and whether it's all really working together, let's talk. At KPP Financial, we offer no-cost portfolio reviews to help bring clarity and confidence to your financial picture. Just go to investtalk.com and click on portfolio review. Over the weekend, visit our new online store. Just go to investtalkstore.com. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial.